You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, I wanted to ask you about Halloween. You're a bit of a US-centric yeah. sort of, almost an honorary American, and you love America, and in many ways you're absolutely right. But this whole Halloween thing, have you ever been there when it's Halloween?
Yeah. And they take it seriously.
I know.
And they have parties. Look, the rest of the world is adopted it in a kind of half-hearted way. I think the kids enjoy dressing up and that. But in America, all the streets, every house decorates itself. You know, you get decorations. And certainly my daughter in Boston, I mean, she went all out with the decorations. But when we were in New York, there was one street well-known in New York, whether it – I'm trying to remember – somewhere in the 70s or something, the whole street is closed out. And the street is closed out and it's known for the decorations. You live in that place, you participate.
Right.
And it's just wonderful to take the kids there, you know, because it's a safe zone. The cops are there in each corner making sure that everything. So it's a big celebration. But my grandchildren who are in this, you know, my granddaughter's 16, my grandson's nearly 15, big parties around, you know, everybody came around for the weekend and they let go. So it's just another excuse to have fun.
Yeah, it is. But it's very interesting that you say that the rest of the world has sort of half-heartedly adopted it as a holiday. Yeah. And it annoys me somewhat because I remember when I didn't know it was Halloween, and I stupidly answered the door. It was many years ago. And a group of little kids there, and they wanted sweets. And I had some sweets, but I said, okay. This was in South Africa. I said, what is Halloween? And the little girl who was the spokesperson, she must have been about eight, said, it's when you knock on doors and people give you sweets or you play a trick on them. I said, okay, that's a good start. But what is Halloween? And she said, well, I just told you. And I said, okay, what is Christmas? And she said, that's Jesus Christ's birthday. I said, okay, that's a good answer. It's not the whole story, but that's a good answer. But you don't know what Halloween is, do you? And then she repeated her answer. And I thought, you know what? Go away and come back later when you know what Halloween is. Because I'm not just giving you something because you think it's when you knock on people's doors and you get given stuff. You've got to know about these things. And I know I'm an old a curmudgeon when it comes to that sort of thing. But I do believe it. No one in England or South Africa knows what Halloween is. I don't think.
No. Was it a Spanish holiday or a Spanish...
It's Mexican, I think, wasn't it?
Mexican. So, yeah.
All Hallows' Eve, and I still don't know myself, and quite honestly, I don't want to. I'm very, very happy. But America's a very... It's interesting that America is such a different place. They've got American football, they've got baseball, which is played... baseball is played in Japan and Cuba, but it's based in the United States. You've got American football, which is very exclusively American, with a few spin-offs. There's a few American teams with expats and everything. And then you have Halloween and Thanksgiving. America, in a way, is an island in certain respects, don't you find, culturally?
Yeah, totally. You know, Thanksgiving, I mean, there was a Pilgrim Fathers, you know. There was a certain amount of religion around it.
Yes.
But today it's adopted as a family day. I mean, everybody celebrates it. Everybody goes home for Thanksgiving, and they have the traditional dinners, which is midway through the afternoon with turkey and so on. You know, I mean, I don't know how many millions of turkeys are killed. But again, if you think about the origins, it was the Quakers, I think, that introduced it. But it's an accepted, everybody goes home for Thanksgiving. So, whether you're religious or not, whether you're Catholic, whether you're Hindu, Muslim, Jewish, whatever it is, everybody celebrates Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And I don't know, you know, just whatever.
Much bigger than Christmas.
Much bigger. It's funny that I've been in somehow Chris. This is very dangerous. I'm on very dangerous ground.
Okay.
But when we used to walk through, when you used to celebrate, certainly in my youth, or not even a few years ago, there was a lot more energy put into Christmas.
Yes.
And now all you do is you get annoyed by Boney, what's it, Boney?
Boney M.
What is their name? Boney M, yeah.
By the rivers of Babylon.
And it goes on and on and on. It's just annoying. And even so, I think it's done well. This is a record we're going to play. But I don't find the same kind of enthusiasm, as you say, for that whole period is maybe Thanksgiving and Black Friday and all those things at the moment. So there's been a shift. There's been a shift, no doubt.
Big shift.
I'm just an observer. I'm not making I'm not making any kind of
judgment
opinions. I'm just saying, hold judgment. Yeah. Hey, hold on. See, this is, this is different. Things have changed.
They really have. I was watching an interview with the CEO of Mars, the confectionery company, on CNN about an hour ago, and he says that this time of year we just sell out. I mean, we've got these huge factories, but we sell out of things like these giant bags of M&Ms and things like that. And he says this is like a Super Bowl and Thanksgiving and Christmas all rolled into one. He says Halloween is the best time of year for us. They go berserk.
Oh, yes. You have to stock up. I mean, it's that I've seen, and I've been there for Halloween. In fact, I was there 5 years ago because I ran the New York Marathon 5 years ago. So we arrived just on Halloween. Generally, I'm not there at that time. But you have no idea the amount of sweets that are bought. You just have no idea. And the kids accumulate these massive bags. And that's odd because, families today are so conscious of feeding their kids sugar, because they bounce off the walls. So it's, oh, geez, you've never seen the thunder like this. Wait, it's coming. Sorry.
What was that?
It was very soft. I thought it would be much stronger. I just saw thunder coming through our window here and everything. I thought I was going to get blown away. At the end of the day, it was just a murmur. But huge lightning strike.
Okay, well, thanks very much for the weather report, David. Maybe we can talk about the markets now because I've led you astray as usual.
No.
Why is let's have a look at the market today. Why is Naspers and Prosus? Why are they both up so much? What's going on there?
It's a reaction to the big sellout. There was a little bit of a bounce in this morning in Asia.
Yeah.
But you must also remember the rand's gone from 18 to 1835 or 1840.
Yes.
So there's been a lot of weakness in the rand today, I think, which has just given them that little bit of an extra lift. So this morning, Tencent was up about 4 or 5% or something. I see this as a dead cat bounce in that. I'm very cautious of what's happening in China. And if you look at where Tencent is, growth that's being projected, it's very tame, very muted. So I would probably be switching. And saying, listen, that game's over. Not that the other games are all that exciting, but I'd prefer to be somewhere else. I'd prefer to be in the US rather than in China Tech. But it is a good day for Prosus and Naspers. But remember, on Friday, it took us down, 5 or 6%. So we're getting this volatility. But I'm battling in my mind to understand what's going to happen to Prosus and Naspers. It's still very much the company that's dictated by where Tencent goes, and even that is difficult to forecast. It's going to take some time before the Politburo decides to tell us what they're going to do and how they're going to direct China. But I can't see much upside for these kind of businesses.
And David, the whole story with the geopolitics and Taiwan, which at some stage is going to flare up. Yeah. And even if it doesn't affect Tencent's business, the fact is it will affect the psyche of Tencent investors and therefore, of course, the knock-on effect to the JSE Securities Exchange. It's a lot of risk there, isn't there?
You've summed it up exactly. It's psychology. It's not the underlying business, which remains steady, and the Chinese will continue to use the apps that come from Tencent. But it's how far the company can expand. It's all at the mercy of Mr. Xi. You know, there's, I don't think they're going to have the freedom that they had and that, you know, we thought they'd have, and that's the reasons that we went into it. So I think it's going to be a rough ride for Naspers and Prosus. And I know they're buying back their shares, but at the end of the day, it's just money that's revolving, you know, from one to the other. I don't know whether the whole exercise has been worth it. You know, there was a short term, a gap was created. I mean, it was closed, but I think it's opened up again. So for me, it's a big theme, Lindsay, this whole standoff between the US and China. I think it's a massive theme that's going to unfold. I don't know whether it's going to get ugly, you know, ugly in the sense anything more than mudslinging, but, for choice, I think that there's going to be a huge pressure on the US, you know, to combat where China's going and try and, not compete, but keep their edge, in technology. There's some areas, I think, maybe where China has got the edge, but I mean, overall, there was an article which in The Economist this week, which has kind of summed up how I've felt. The beauty about The Economist is that they write beautifully. Yes. So I can actually read this article and say, yeah, I'm going to take a bit of this and a little bit of, I'm going to put it into their kind of words, but it sums up, you know what I mean? Mm. It's called a do laissez-faire. Adieu, you know, which is Bidenomics, as their briefing is called. And what they do is they point out how Biden, you know, the amount of money that Biden is spending on the U.S. economy, $1.2 trillion in that infrastructure bill. Then there's a massive amount, I can't remember, about $200-300 billion for the Semiconductor and Science Act. And then the other one, which is the renewables, which is about $400 billion as well. So it's huge amounts of money that are going to be spent to give them self-sufficiency, if that's the right word. You know, yes. In other words, no reliance on anybody outside of America, and also to give them a competitive edge. This is the space race all over again in technology. So I think it's something I would build my strategy around. No, work's got to be done on it. But I would think that this is going to be, when we come out of this inflation story, you know, when we complete it, when they start slowing down, I think the next thing is that America's got to go for growth, and this is going to be the driver. So, I'm giving you the embryo, the very, soft foundation at the moment.
I understand what you're saying, and you'll always be a fan, and it will always serve you well. I'm sure it served you and your clients well up until now, so why shouldn't it in the future? Just one little last word on China. I don't know if you got this story in South Africa, but in the Netherlands, they found out that the Chinese had set up their own police stations unofficially, and they called it, they're obviously monitoring their citizens who are verbalizing their dissent, because they're obviously in Europe and they think they're untouchable, but they're not, they're being monitored. And they set up these illegal police stations, as about four or five of them, and they phone up the chap and say, you've got to come in to renew your visa or something like that, and they interrogate them, and they say, you've got to do this, this, and this. And then it emerged that these police stations are all over the place. Canada was the first country that said, yeah, we've seen this as well. The Chinese tentacles spread far and wide, David Shapiro.
I know.
Scary.
That scares me. Mm. Yeah, it is scary. You know, there's human rights to be followed like that, not to have freedom of speech, is what worries me, and that's why it's going to hold back any kind of growth. The only area that I'm concerned about, I'm watching more carefully, is on the luxury side. Will they clamp down?
Yeah.
You know, will going into Europe or even in China, buying an LVMH bag or a Rolex watch or anything like that, you know, will it be frowned upon? You know, are you going to have to wear those kind of round collars in a Mao Zedong jacket, you know, you remember those little red hat.
Mm.
Or are they going to just let it go? I don't know how far they'll take it. For the meantime, I think the view is things will just remain, and you know, they're not going to, unless it becomes really conspicuous and really outlandish. But I mean, generally, they probably allow that to happen. So we've got to watch that. We've got to watch it very carefully. But I'm very nervous of what China represents.
I'm very, very nervous, and that's become a dictatorship even more than it was, and going back, it's essentially regressing from the free market back to an even more controlled economy. Anyways, let's leave that alone. Some news from South Africa today. South Africa's Transnet has lifted its force majeure at all port terminals, so commodities starting to flow again. Trade surplus in South Africa has widened to nearly 20 billion in September. Good news. And South Africa's private sector credit extension up to around about 9.75%. So people borrowing money again and corporates borrowing money again. So a few little green shoots there, David.
Against that, there is that activity. But I think the one thing that's holding us back, number one, is load shedding. Mm. And it's incredibly destructive. It happens, Lindsay. I don't know what stage we are today. We were lucky we never had it over the weekend, but it is a major issue. And do you know what I mean? It's a major issue that's going to be felt by all kinds of business. The other thing is that when I looked at the finance minister's midterm budget, and he said that South Africa can be expected to grow at 1.6% for the next 3 years.
That's no good.
No. You know, that's
rubbish.
In the end, we may have these pockets where things pick up here and there, but that's rubbish. This is a country that needs to get back to what we had at the beginning of the century, the 5% and thereabouts, which came from the Chinese super cycle. I know that might be coming to an end, or that has come to an end. We don't know what China's going to do, but at 1.6%, it's going to be very, very difficult for retailers, for banks to expand. The only way they can expand is by eating somebody else's lunch, by taking away from smaller businesses, bigger businesses getting better, clumping up everybody around them. So, the chemists, Dis-Chems and Clicks will get bigger because they'll bring pharmacies in, and the small suburban pharmacists will vanish. Will lose its business. So that's how they're going to expand. You taking somebody else's market share. But overall, we're in for a difficult time.
Yeah, I've been talking to lots of clever people in the last week or so, and I talk about just review 2022, please, but more importantly, go towards 2023. And it's almost as though to a man and a woman, they have said, the worst is probably over. And I referenced the European inflation that came out over, I think it was on Friday. I mean, Germany at like 11% and France at 10%. I can't remember the exact numbers, but really, really big inflation numbers. And the ECB doubling its interest rate from 75 basis points to 1.5% and goes on. And they said, well, what will happen is it'll take a while to get through the system. The inflation will come back, but it'll take a while for the interest rate rises to get through the system, maybe 6 to 12 months. But the stock market will discount beyond that. And we think that the worst is over. You don't believe that yet.
In South Africa, I think it's a bigger issue. It's not inflation, it's growth. There is no growth. In fact, that is a bigger story than inflation. I think this deep concern about growth as we go into the midterms in the US. I think the one thing that's holding the Democrats back and what they're really nervous of is that it's very easy for the opposition to blame them for inflation and to blame them for the state of the US economy, which has fallen quite dramatically or is eased or softened. So I think they're not the only country. I think there's a lot more concern that if these central banks, whether it's Christine Lagarde, or whether it's Jay Powell and that, or Bailey, continue to push rates higher and higher, at the end it's going to bring a much deeper recession than perhaps they expected, and that's going to be hard to get out of. When you get into a deep recession and suddenly you say, okay, we're going to reduce interest rates, it don't happen quickly. It takes a long time to get confidence back and people to go out there and borrow and expand because they're nervous. They've cut back and they remain very nervous. So you've got to get that balance right. You can address inflation,
but you don't want to suck all the oxygen out of a person's lungs or a country's lungs. You know, you want to leave a little bit there. And that to me is the big argument at the moment. And it's, Lindsay, it's becoming a big political issue.
Yeah, it is. There's people acting a little bit too late in certain cases, yeah. And a question, and then maybe overshooting, like a market overshoots to the upside or the downside. Maybe they'll overshoot with interest rates and then have to reset, bring it back to normality. It's a very difficult year you've got coming up in 2023, US asset managers, I think.
Listen, it's never been easy, but I mean, it is difficult. And you've got to do your homework. That's why when I said, you know, right, we've got to go into this. What's going to drive 2023? What's going to drive 2024? What are the companies? You know, how difficult is it going to be? For the first time now, I'm starting to promote. Say, hold on a sec. I'm saying from South African point of view, you know, if you've got, because we manage money both here and abroad. And right. I say, for me, the ideal position, this is my ideal position, is to say, okay, have a couple of, I'm going to use millions if you don't mind.
Please
I'm not
do.
Bragging, Barbara. You know, I'm not going to say have a few rands.
A million is not what it used to be, David, so use as many millions as you like, please.
No, I'm just saying if we were looking at a 10 million portfolio or thereabouts, because it's in tens, you know, and it makes sense, I would say, okay, what about 30% here in RSA stock? I looked at a blend of long dated, and I'm quite comfortable with them. You can get a blend of over 10% yield.
Really?
You know, that's your clean yield. I said, okay, the 7 million, or you can take 4 million of that, you know, going back to the traditional 60-40, and say, okay, I'm happy with 3 or 4 million in local here.
That are you give talking you about expense. The South African fixed income and bond market? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
All right.
And then the 7 million or the 6 million, whichever, you know, if you want 30-70 or 40-60, take offshore. Go for growth. Go for quality companies. And in that way, you're protecting your purchasing power. And, you know, you're protecting your purchasing power and you know, you're getting growth. But here you're getting yield. And you're getting pretty decent yield. Even it might not be. It might just cover inflation, but I think for the meantime, and bear in mind, I'm not holding to maturity. You know what I mean? You can trade these bonds.
Mm.
You know, you can trade them. That's the point. I'm not saying stick like this for 10 years, but I think it's a short term, maybe of 1-2 years until we get out of this, until we get greater clarity. I'm quite happy to do that. Then down the line, of course, you can shift it, those bonds back into equities, you know, if the growth does come. But I'm not uncomfortable doing that at the moment. You know, just saying, okay, let's. There's nothing in the local market that grabs me or attracts me. I would rather have a bond giving me 10.5 than maybe APSA giving me 4.5 dividend yield or something like that. You know, or a bank.
I agree with you. Now, what about? I just want to very quickly talk about Europe. I don't know how much money it takes to retire in Europe, but let's say you've got 3 million euros. Okay.
Yes.
And you haven't got a pension or anything like that. You've just got 3 million euros. Is that enough to give you a monthly income in order to survive, pay your rent or pay your bond or whatever it is? 3 million euros. It's probably not, is it?
That's a lot of money. I mean,
in South African terms,
rand is.
Yes, I know, but we're not I'm specifically, it's you know, it's like 55 million rand or something. It's a decent amount of money.
That's okay.
But it's 3 million in Europe.
You should be able to do okay.
There must be somebody that can give you a 2,000-3,000 euros a month, guaranteed, risk-free. Yes. Would you not think with 3 million euros?
Yes, I would sleep with 3 million euros, I think you'll be able to find something. You've got to get a blend. You know, the thing is that in Europe, it's still a socialist country. When I say country, continent.
Region.
You know, still region, much better. In the sense that the government looks after you in health and education and pension. You know, they don't put you on the street. They don't want you to be on street corners begging. So generally, that's why we haven't got an equity culture there. But
I think you've got to get that blend. You've got to get a blend of going for growth, going for companies that are going to grow, as well as getting some kind of return. I tell you what my view is, my attitude is. What do you need? What does it cost out of those 3 million euros to live a year?
Let me think. What does it cost? If I rented a house for, let's call it a flat rather, for with expensive medical expenses and everything in the rent, it would be 2,500 euros a month. And that's before you go out and have a couple of meals occasionally, that sort of thing. So 2,500 euros for a decent apartment. You've got your medical aid and water and other utilities and stuff. So 2,500 euros.
3 million euros. So you've got 3 million euros.
Yeah. No, I'm saying I was just thinking of the comparison between South Africa. I wish I had.
Yeah. No. What I would say with that, for a person like that, I would say, what do you need to live? This is what we did. Or have done our approaches. What do you need to live? You know, you need 40,000, call it 500,000, not 50,000 euros a year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Here it is. Go away. go away. Leave us with another 2,900,000. Or even if it's 200,000 euros. Yeah. Go away. Leave us with 2,800,000. And we would invest that in growth stocks. You know, when I say growth stocks, don't misunderstand that. These are not stocks that are reckless, just means that they're decent growth companies still paying dividends, with a bright future and so on. And each year you need the money, we'll give you that, but don't interfere with us. That's it. Yeah, take it, go away, put it in the bank and leave us with the balance. And I think that, for me, it's a much better policy than trying to eke out that 40,000, whatever you need, whatever you need euros, putting it in for the year.
Yes, 56,000.
Because the markets will go. The markets will go. Mm. These are quality companies. You look at, even in Europe, if you look what's in Holland, if you look what's in the luxury companies, if you go to America and look at some of the tech companies and that, you can do it. All you need is, 5-6% yield per annum, growth. You'll get that.
Okay, that was one thing I was going to ask you. I can't think of the other thing actually. Apart from, I need to call out a few commodity prices for you, because this will tell you something about the state of the world's economy. Okay, I'm going to get rid of the wheat price, which has been affected by the fact that the Russians are pulling out of that grain export agreement, which is brokered by the UN. So they're pulling out of that. So wheat prices have shot up to the tune of just under 7%. You've got heating oil down nearly 7%, and I don't know why that is, but natural gas prices, again linked to the conflict in Europe, 9.5% higher today, which is quite big. But the ones that will really get your ears pricked, Shapiro, iron ore is down at $84 per ton, down 5.6% today. Yeah. Steel prices down 6.5% today. Yeah. Copper down 1.7%. Yeah. These are industrial metals linked to the world's economy. And this is a sign to me.
That came out of the data from China this morning, which was very soft.
Yeah.
PMI is falling below. In other words, the outlook for manufacturing starting to soften.
Yes.
So I think that knocked iron ore, that kind of knocked our mining markets. It was cushioned by the rand, by the weakness in the rand. But Lindsay, that's an issue. They've got to come out. What the Politburo is going to come out will dictate where commodity prices go. Are they going to start helping the property sector again? Are they going to give loans and then prop it up? We don't know what's going to come out. Of this new government in China, and that remains. That's why I'm saying I don't want to be there. I really don't want to be there. But it will dictate where prices go, where commodity prices go.
Yeah, it will do. And maybe it's just a once-off, as you say, with the Chinese data. But iron ore at 84, that's the lowest we've seen it for quite a while. Not good for Kumba Iron Ore on the JSE, etc. Okay, let's talk a little bit about football. I need to get my story out the way first before I know you're bursting to tell me about Arsenal 5, Nottingham Forest.
Interested in your views.
Okay, I was watching, I watch online Ipswich Town. They were playing against Charlton. Both used to be quite big teams. Ipswich Town took 3,200 supporters with them. They packed one end, and they're noisy, and it's great fun. They go 1-0 up, so it's 1-0 at half-time, and just after half-time, they go 2-0 up. Within 10 minutes, it's 2-2, and it goes into injury time. In other words, it was the 94th minute. There'd been a long injury, and so they were in the 94th minute, and it was still 2-2. Ipswich scored a third. I thought, that's it. Game over. Ipswich scored a fourth. I thought, that's it. We're top of the league now. We've leapfrogged Plymouth Argyle, and we're going to be top of the league. In the 99th minute, Charlton scored twice, so it was a 4-4 draw. I'm still traumatised by this experience.
I can't believe it.
Four goals in injury time.
No.
That's no good. Moving on to happier things.
I can't believe that. I just picked that up. I mean,
4-4.
I've got to look that up. I've got to go.
You have to look it up.
I don't think there's ever been four goals
scored in injury time before.
I'm going to look on YouTube and get.
Oh, it's there, all right. watch it and weep. David, there was one move by Arsenal when they were in full flow on Sunday against Nottingham Forest. Okay, they're the bottom team, but they did beat Liverpool recently. But anyway, Arsenal, I think they strung together like 37 or 38 passes. And I know that Mikel Arteta is influenced by Pep. And when Pep introduced the whole concept of tiki-taka at Barcelona, you know, passing so the other team can't get the ball and they get frustrated and they get tired and then you go in for the kill. But this was tiki-taka on steroids. It was so fast and so precise. I thought it was the best football I'd seen this season, actually. I think Arsenal are fantastic at the moment.
They're playing very... And you know, when Saka went off, I got a bit nervous. I thought, oh, no. You know, the balance would be broken and don't know who they're going to bring in. You know, Reece Nelson has been there for a long time.
Yeah.
He's been very persistent, and I'm so pleased that he's shone.
Me too.
But I thought it was going to be a difficult time for them. And then second half, they just blew them away. But they're so good in the box, and they hold the ball, and they're good with the ball in the box. And I'm absolutely surprised, you know, at the way Arsenal are playing.
Are you starting to believe now, David? Are you a believer?
Well, they're still a bit soft. You know, they're still a bit soft. They've shown it in some games. They get tired very easily. And I think Arteta's right, you know, say, listen, it's time to grow up. This is what happens to you when you play in the big leagues. Do you know what I mean? You either just face up to it and play, you know. So he's been quite critical of them being tired and capitulating.
Yes.
But this is the demands of playing at these levels. You want to go into a Champions League? You want to win a league? You've got to play well. You know, you've got to be fit and you've got to give everything. So I hope they can, you know, they can manage it. But I mean, some of the players that have come through, poor old Jesus Gabriel. I mean,
Jesus,
he's still brilliant.
He is.
He's still, and you know, the work that he does, I think, is, even though he hasn't scored, I think the work that he does, the work rate he does, and he's defending, creating, holding up the ball, still a brilliant player. And I think that's made all the difference to the team.
Yeah.
Bringing in good players.
Yeah, I think Arsenal, I don't know how they lost at Manchester United. That's the only defeat of the season so far. It was just an aberration, I think. But you look at Chelsea getting hammered 4-1 by Brighton. That's not championship. That's not a championship challenging team.
I think this Potter was a bad move.
I do
too. I think it's a bad move. I don't think he's a Chelsea manager. I don't know if he's going to last.
No.
He's brilliant at Brighton, and they're playing lovely soccer, but there's nothing in Chelsea that he's done. You know, I just looked at it. It was just a ragged team.
Yeah, and City didn't look quite the same without Erling Haaland, but you still got Kevin De Bruyne, so it's very good. Anyway, David, thank you very much for your extended time today. Enjoy your Halloween. If anyone knocks at your door, just turn the TV off and lie on the sofa so they can't see you.
My buildings, they're not even grandchildren here. They're old people here. They've gone to sleep at 7 o'clock, including me at 7:30.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm on a street, and there's a very prominent bell, so I'm going upstairs, turning all the lights off and ignoring these little creeps. David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities, and that is Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.